Insights into the weekly Parsha. Here is an adapted version of the shiur that I typically give on a Shabbos morning before Shachris. And so being that we're not going to be able to get together in person, and that we are separate, but nonetheless together, I share with you some words and some teaching from this coming week's Parsha. Parsha's Vayakel Pekudeh, double Parsha, as well as the fourth and final of the special Parshios that we read, Parsha's HaChodesh, the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And it is also a special Shabbos because it is Shabbos of Chazak V'Nis Chazek. It is the Siyum, it is the completion of Sefer Shemos. And Emir Tzashem, we should all experience and feel Chazak, and we should all be V'Nis Chazek. You know, typically throughout Chumash, we find that whenever there's a Tzivoy, whenever there's a commandment, whenever the Ribbono Shel Olam tells Moshe Rabbeinu that it is to be taught to the Bnei Yisrael, it's usually Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Le'emor Tzavis Bnei Yisrael. It should be that this commandment should be, and a directive should be given to the Bnei Yisrael, to the Israelites. And this is the usual formulaic version of how, in fact, it goes in. Whatever nuance in particular that the Torah is going to address, it's usually in this way. But we have at the beginning of this week's first Parsha, and Parsha's Vayakel, something that's unique, something that's different. That even though what we have is a litany of law as relates to the construct of the Mishkan, the construct of the tabernacle and the various furnishings, but the way this particular tzivoy, why this particular commandment is organized and introduced, is something that's very unique in this parsha. The pasuk tells us, Vayakel Moshe, and it was Moshe who called the whole community, Vayakel. As Kol Adas Bnei Yisrael Vayomer Alem, and he says to them, Eila Dvarim Asher Tziva Hashem La'asli Seisam, here are the things that you're meant to do. And the specifics of what it is that he's telling them to do is through the construction of the Mishkan and the various tapestry and the furnishings and the minutiae, the particulars and the details. But the key word in introducing this is Vayakel, is the gathering, is the assembly. And this word assembly has taken so much more and new meaning for all of us. The idea whereby we are being told over and again that which will help us limit and certainly hopefully mitigate the spread of this horrific virus is if there is a lack and if there's a lessening of assembly. We don't get together. We don't want to be in an assembly because after all, that is what will cause the greatest and a greater sense of the spread of this heinous virus. What's interesting though is that despite the fact that we're not physically together, but of course we know that we are spiritually and always together. We are unique and unified. We are bonded. We are undivided. And despite the fact that we can't actually be together, we are together. We're not physically together, but we are emotionally and we are certainly spiritually together. So the concept of Vayakel, of assembly, it is the assembly that brings us together, the assembly of Klalis of the Jewish people in the world and in the narrative of our directive of our higher calling, of our destiny. Vayakel Moshe es kol adas b'nei Yisrael. He introduces this obligation of Mishkan through the concept of assembly, of us gathering. We gather to hear words of Torah. We gather now in this virtual Beis Medrash, in the virtual shuls that we've created, in the virtual online distant learning, which has brought so many people together. And the resolve of the Jewish people, it's so strong, it is so robust, and is so able to weather this storm to be stronger than ever before. But what I'd like to focus our attention here is to realize not only how this Vayakel calls us as it called them, but to think about this whole synergy and the way it's symmetrically set up in this Chumash and in this particular Parsha, and specifically the first two verses in Parshas Vayakel. Right after there is this introducing of the presentation of the construction of the Mishkan and the various components. So the Torah introduces this command through Moshe's statement by reiterating to them another command. What's the other command that Moshe Rabbeinu reiterates to the people? Some Pasuk Beis, Sheishes Yomim Ta'aseh Melacha. In 6 days, Ta'aseh Melacha, work should be done. And on the seventh day, Yelochem Kodesh Shabbos Shabboson. But the seventh day has extremely special sanctity, exceedingly high sanctity. It's Shabbos Shabboson LaHashem. It is a special Shabbos Shabboson LaHashem. Kol HaOisam, bo anybody who does Malacha, Yumos. The person who does work on this day will be put to death. Now it's interesting to note, like, why is it that we interrupt the command and all of the details of the construct of the Mishkan with a command yet again of Shmir Shabbos? So Rashi explains that the commands of the Mishkan are preceded by the command of Shabbos in order to emphasize that the work to build the Mishkan must not be performed on Shabbos. Why? Because the people might have mistakenly assumed that the lofty project of constructing a Mishkan, a place, a residence for divine presence, Hashras Hashchina, it should override the prohibitions of Shabbos, and thus that the work must continue 7 days a week. And so to dispel this misconception, Moshe Rabbeinu noted that Shabbos must be strictly observed even during the period of constructing the Mishkan. That's what Rashi says. Sheshes Yamim, Hiktim Lahem, Azharas Shabbos, Litziva Malechas HaMishkan, Leimer She'enu Doiches HaShabbos. To tell us that it is not Doiches HaShabbos, that Shabbos must be observed, that there's no interruption, and it's wholly of an endeavor as it is to construct the Mishkan and to build a place for Ashras HaShchina, but Shabbos is paramount. Beini Uvein B'nei Yisrael, Oisi Li'olam. It is Shabbos, Likra Shabbos, it's the Shabbos that we call out to you and need you. It is the essence of bracha, quintessential blessing that we have in our lives and in our homes, in our essence. Lest the people mistakenly assume that despite the lofty project of this building being Baina HaMishkan, nonetheless, it is Shabbos that is never to be pushed to the side. That is the answer that Rashi gives to why there is Pasuk Aleph and Pasuk Beis, first the Mishkan and then Shabbos. But I'd like to share with you, while there are certainly many answers or perhaps additional commentaries to this sequence of Pesukim, I'd like to share with you another, perhaps meaningful explanation and additional Perush. The Tikkunei Zohar in the Bereishis Taman section, which some people actually have the minhag to recite after Shachris each day, so it teaches us that the Lamed Tes Melachos, that the 39 Melachos, the categories of forbidden activity on Shabbos, they correspond to the Lamed Tes Klolos, they correspond to the 39 curses, which Hashem Yisbarach Bechvaido Uva'atzmo pronounced after the chait of Adam and Chava, after Adam and Chava sinned by eating from the Eitz Hadas. It was the Ribbono Shelam who pronounced 10 curses upon Adam. There were 10 curses upon Chava, 10 upon the Nachash, upon the snake, and 9 upon the Adama, for a grand total of 39. And the Shabbos prohibitions, therefore, correspond, he writes, to these klolos, to these curses. And the question, of course, is what is the meaning of this parallel? What's the relationship between the Lamites Malachos, that are forbidden activities on Shabbos, and the 39 klolos, the curses that Hashem, in the aftermath of the chait of eating from the Eitz Hadas, that those curses were found upon Adam, Chava, and the Nachash. So we, of course, know that before Adam and Chava sinned, what was their existence? We know that they lived in an ideal existence. They lived in a pristine existence. They lived in an existence without having to do any avodah, without having to do any work at all. They were just in an experience of being. All their food and all their other needs were provided for them. They just were able to bask in the glory of divine providence. They were able to have an experience of Ashras HaShchina. They were able to have the purpose of ultimate being, and that is something that they experienced without interruption. And they did not have to exert any effort to care for themselves whatsoever. Of course, we know that once they sinned, once they ate from the Eitz Hadas, so their reality was changed. It wasn't just changed momentarily, it was changed what seemed to be forever. There was a new narrative where there wasn't death in the world, so now there was death in the world. Where there weren't certain punishments related to behaviors, now there were. There was now going to be a punishment of v'zeh sapecha teichalecha, by the sweat of your brow shall you earn a livelihood for a man. By the pain shall a woman bear child would be the punishment to Chava. The snake, the Nachash, would have to then crawl on his belly. There were now permanent realities that were as a result of this that would stain mankind, humanity forever. Not only that, they were driven physically from the Garden of Eden, from Gan Eden. They now needed to perform a different way of life and act in a different way. What did they need to do? They needed to work. They needed to work the land. They needed to till the soil. You know what they needed to do? They needed to perform the 39 malachos. They needed to do the activities, the many of them and the various of them that must be done to prepare food, the activities that were needed to be done to provide clothing, the activities that they needed to do to provide shelter. They were now engaged in the 39 activities of labor, which are forbidden for us on Shabbos, but during the week they're not forbidden, they're necessary. Those necessary activities of labor are only a result of the sin and the reality anew of the chait of eating from the Eitz Hadas. Now what happens? On Shabbos Kodesh, we return, at least to some extent, as the Gemara tells us that Shabbos is a chelik, is a 60th of Me'ein Olam Haba, or a 60th of the world to come. And so on Shabbos, what we do is we return to some extent to the existence of Gan Eden. You know how we do that? We do that by refraining from these 39 malachos. We're not allowed to engage in these lamentes malachos. You know, sometimes people think that there's a million don'ts on Shabbos. There's a million don't do this on Shabbos. And while that might be interpreted that way, certainly, and while there's certain realities to that, which we can't deny, but if we look at it and flip it on its head, what we understand is that there's something else. That the prohibition of engaging in lamites malachos, it returns us to a ruchniistic state. It returns us to the mokum, to the place of Adam and Chava, koidem achet, avachila me'etz adas. It brings us back to this pristine state where they didn't need lamites malachos. We don't want lamites malachos on Shabbos. We're not lacking. We don't want to do that. Why? Because we want to be in a mokum, in a place, in a spiritual reality of Adam and Chava, koidem achet, of eating of achila me'etz hadas. And so therefore, through reenacting the ideal conditions in which Adam and Chava lived before the chait that they performed, that they did, when they did not have to do any work, when we do that, it's me'ein olam haba. It's me'ein gan eden. We feel a shtik ruchni is different on Shabbos than we do throughout the course of the week because we re-facilitate the concept and the construct of not using any of the lamites malachos. We return on the state of Shabbos in the place of the heiligish Shabbos to a place of ruchnius, utter ruchnius that is stain-free, that is not earthly, that doesn't need lamites malachos, doesn't need you to plow or to till or to knead or to sow or to sort or to grind or to build or to demolish. Nothing. It's kula ruchnius. Kulo spirituality only. And thus then, what we see is that the 39 malachos correspond to the 39 curses, the 39 forms of work which became necessary as a result of Adam and Chava's sin. So it's now that our Chachamim teach that when Bnei Israel, when they stood at Har Sinai, so they had not only this magnanimous experience, cataclysmic event in the history of our people. But Chazal tell us something else happened. That when Bnei Yisrael went to Mamre Har Sinai, and when they accepted the Torah, and when they said, Naaseh v'nishma, we will do and we will hear, they announced their complete and unconditional commitment to Torah. So they did something more than just even just receiving the Torah. You know what they did? In that very moment, with that very proclamation, they rid themselves of all the spiritual effects of Adam and Chava's Aveira. At that very moment, they rose to the level of Adam and Chava in Gan Eden, having eliminated all the contamination of the Aveira of the sin which Adam and Chava committed, and therefore at that point, they were destined to return to the ideal existence of Gan Eden, whereby they would not have to do any work at all. I'm not talking about, I don't have to go to the office. Of course, everybody now is appreciating what it was to go to the office. The work that they'd have to do is v'zeis apecha toich alechem. We want to do the work of avodas Hashem, the work of serving God. And even though that situation that was a temporary pause because of Shabbos and the Shabbos experience, it wasn't a permanent pause. And with the series of events and the experience that took place at Mamre Har Sinai, what happened, Chazal tell us, through the words of Saying Nasa V'Nishma, we returned as a people to that place. And that was a place of ruchnius that the Jewish people, that Am Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael reached, that was not experienced since the time of Adam and Chava before the eating from the Eitz Hadas. And now they were on this extraordinary level anew. They were there and they fell, and now they were there anew again. And that's where they were. And that's where they were hopefully going to stay. That's where they were going to remain. But then sadly, Chazal tell us, and of course we know, that that all changed. That the spiritual high and that spiritual place that they were was not a place that they would long lastingly remain. It all changed with the next sin. The two primary Aveira sins that are mentioned in the Torah without compromise and with tremendous pain and heartfelt anguish are the sins of the eating from the Eitz Hadas, and the second is the chet of the chet ha'egel, the sin of the golden calf. And while there are others, of course, mentioned in Chumash, the many, sadly, and throughout Tanakh, these are primary. And this, in this interpretation, is the primary reality of what it meant, the change of status with the chet of the golden calf, the sin of the chet ha'maraglim. You see, because when the people sinned, they repeated, in a sense, the chet of Adam and Chav in the Garden of Eden, in Gan Eden, in that they lost the ideal experience they were meant to otherwise enjoy. They were on that level. They experienced that level. And they lost it. They went back to Mount Sinai, and then they regained it. And what happened? They have the sin of the chet ha'egel, and they lost it again. So when you develop this point further, what we say, what we understand, is that the sin of the golden calf, the chet ha'egel, it called the world's very existence into question. Something that we're contemplating today. What in the world is going on in the world around us? How is the world going to weather this storm? Why is it that this is happening? Since we know that no events happen in this world without them being messages for us, the Jewish people, what is the message that we are meant to take? What is the world's very existence that seems to be calling into question? Where do we find ourselves? Our Chachamim, our sages, teach us that the world was created on condition that Bnei Yisrael would accept the Torah. That is the reason why the world was created. That is the condition that the world was created. There is no other reason why the world was created. It was meant for us, only and exclusively for us, to accept the Torah Nasa V'Nishma in its fullest glory and with its fullest application. We weren't placed on this world to only find physical and temporary enjoyments. Those are just meant to be the furnishings that empower our spiritual endeavors. You can enjoy a Starbucks and enjoy going to a gym. You can enjoy nature and all of the beautiful scenery in the landscape of this world and the beautiful one that Hashem created. But everything that is material, everything that is physical, everything in this world is meant for us to find the destiny and the purpose of us for which we were created. And the purpose of the world's creation is to accept the Torah, and that's the only purpose. And so for over 2,000 years, contemplate that, for over 2,000 years after the world's creation until Matan Torah, the world's creation was not entirely complete. It was like, imagine a painting, and on that painting you have ink, and the ink, it's still wet. It's not complete. It's not ready to be hung. It's not ready to be on your wall. That means for thousands of years it was not complete. The world was not ready to stand on its own because its continued existence was in doubt. It was dependent upon a moment in time, the seminal event, the historic event of Bnei Israel's acceptance of the Torah. It was dependent on Nasa V'Nishma. That is what made it complete. And so if that's true, if so, then the sin of the golden calf, which reversed the great spiritual effects of Matan Torah, so what it did is it also likewise rolled back the process of creation. Now that Matan Torah was undone, so the world's very existence suddenly came back into question. And that's something very frightening. As we think about the world's existence, we think about the population in this world, and we think about what we are meant to do. In the Kimu V'Kiblu, we are to re-accept the Torah at Mamad Har Sinai on Shabbos, of all days. And indeed, the Kli Yakar of Shlomo Ephraim Lunshitz, 16th century author, prolific scholar, Talmud Chacham Muflag, commentary on the Chumash, in Parshas Pekudei, he writes that after the sin of the golden calf, After the Chet HaEgel, all of creation was about to return back to the state of Sohu Vavohu, back to the state of pre-creation chaos. All of the emptiness and the barrenness and the darkness and the desolate, the pre-creation nothingness. Sohu Vavohu says the Kli Yakar that after the Chet HaEgel, the world was going to go back to that state that prevailed before the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world. And then there was going to be this incredible place of kapara, this unbelievable place of atonement, this great edifice that was going to now bring and vayakel, assemble the Jewish people. And that was the process of building the Mishkan. The Mishkan, which served to atone, according to one interpretation, for the Chet HaEgel, it meant recreating the world. When the Jewish people assemble and recreate themselves and refabricate our connection to Torah and recreate Matan Torah and Mamad Har Sinai, the process of Binyan HaMishkan. So what happens is we recreate the world. We reshape and rename the world. We are now redefining the world. There's a new creation. There is something that is now, for the first time ever, it's in our hands to change the world. Because the world had to then be created anew. And the world, it seems, now again, has to be created anew. Why? Since the effects of Matan Torah, which had marked the completion of the process of creation, were reversed as a result of the Chet HaEgel, it is the Mishkan that is its kapara. And so therefore we understand the Gemara in Maseches Megillah as it comments that the day of the Mishkan's inauguration was as celebratory, was as joyous as the day of the world's creation. It was as great as the day of Maisa Bereshis, because the construction of the Mishkan, it marked the recreation of the world. There was now a recreation of the Olam, of the universe, of the world. That's what the Mishkan was. And that's the Mishkan that we rededicate ourselves to. You could call it a virtual Mishkan that we find ourselves now, but the Mishkan is the Mishkan that is Klal Yisrael. That is everybody's obligation, everybody's chius, everybody's ability to connect to the narrative and the purpose of our creation, which is Kabbalas HaTorah. It's to reenact Mamad Har Sinai, and it is the Mishkan itself that is the vestibule, is the vehicle, is the wherewithal, is the nucleus, is what calls us, not that these are functions of minutia, but every detail of our Avodas Hashem is integral to the building of the Mishkan. How we wake up, Mode Ani Lefanecha. We say Kriyishma Bizman, Talis and Tfilin. We light Shabbos candles Bizman. We're Nizer and Shmiras Halashon. We're conscientious to give tzedakah. We care for the elderly. We rise and give honor to Talmidei Chachamim and for the elderly in our community. Kabedes Avicha Ve'esimecha. We honor our mothers. We honor our fathers. We're mechanech our children al pidarko in the derech HaTorah of Torah Tziva Lonu Moshe Marasha Kihilas Yaakov. It is our Misora. It is Kiheim Chayenu Ve'orech Yomenu. And it is on this basis that we can understand why Moshe Rabbeinu reiterated the command of Shabbos before instructing the people to build the Mishkan. You know why? Because building the Mishkan was essentially repeating the process of the world's creation. And therefore, just as the world's creation included the institution of Shabbos, the construction of the Mishkan had to include Shabbos as well. Shabbos observance is integrally related to the construction of the Mishkan, because it was integral then as part of the world's creation. And the world was now being created anew through the project of building Mishkan. Yiratzon milfanecha Hashem Elokeinu ve'Elokei Avoseinu. In this Shabbos of Vayakel, which seems to be counterintuitive, where we do not physically gather. Oh, but we gather. We gather ourselves, and we gather the souls of the Jewish people as one united body to be Shomer the Shabbos in the act of recreating the world, reenacting and recreating Maisa Bereshis, building our own Meleches HaMishkan, building ourselves through Limud HaTorah and Tefillah, and Al Yidei Zeh, and through this we recreate the world. May it be the will of the Almighty that the world that we hope to recreate and to build is one that is safe, one that is healthy, one that recognizes divine, one that serves with faithful servitude the Ribono Shel Olam as he is meant to be served. And in that merit, Emir Tzashem, we should be zecha to Mashiach Tzidkenu, b'mheiru v'yameinu, v'neymar omein. Good Shabbos to you and to your families. A lichtiga, heiliga, spiritual, a restful, a peaceful, and a healthy Shabbos. Good Shabbos.